Eddie, the Collegiate Freshman. Chapter 9. Summer Break, Part 2. As the end of the summer draws near, Eddie and Kathy decide to have a get-together at their house before classes start. On the guest list is the entire tribe, along with a few members from the track team. With McCutcheon and Leggett gone, the energy is a lot lighter. On the menu is pizza, which will be delivered around noon by Joe and Arianna. The pool is up to a perfect temperature for relaxing, and most importantly, there is not a dead frog in sight. The guests arrive a few at a time, many of them in dune buggies. For those who have never been to Eddie and Kathy's house, Kathy gives them the grand tour. Eddie and Kathy's house is still sparsely decorated and looks beautiful inside. Outside the house, the guys check out Eddie's shop, admiring the partially assembled dune buggy with a Porsche 911 drivetrain and front end. A metallic white body off to the side awaits to be installed on the frame. With them is Tessa, who is checking out all of the dune buggies. Another body remains boxed up, which Eddie will open when it's time to install it. And Eddie is modifying one of the frames to fit the motor laying on the floor in the back of the shop. As they are standing around in Eddie's shop, Tessa asks Eddie, "So, whose is the white dune buggy?" Eddie explains, "It doesn't have anyone's name on it yet. I'm just going to build a few dune buggies and sell them." Tessa asks, "How fast does it go?" Eddie replies, "Too fast." Kurt, the guy who designed them, estimates 140 miles an hour, but I wouldn't drive it that fast. Tessa then asks, "Can you really drive it on the beach?" Eddie explains, "You can drive it on the beach, off-road, on-road, anywhere you want." Tessa tells Eddie, "I need something practical. Jimmy's motorcycle is what I call impractical. A dune buggy seems like it would make much more sense." Eddie tells Tessa, "Well, if you want one, I can build one for you." Tessa replies, "I'm thinking about it." While the guests are arriving, Mark is outside with Paula, relaxing by the pool. Paula asks Mark, "What are you thinking about?" Mark replies, "McCrutchen is going to pop up in another college next year. Since he always wants to be the star, he's going to go to a college that has a really shitty team." Paula comments, "There are a few of them in the division. Two teams in the division haven't won much of anything since I've been at the university." Mark mentions, "I'm not sure I'll ever get a chance to mess with McCrutchen again." Paula reassures Mark, "You'll find other ways to entertain yourself. How about that Nacklo Brocklin guy? You could mess with him." Mark concedes, "Yeah. That's the ticket. I'll mess with Nacklo Brocklin." Mark is happy that he has someone to mess with during the upcoming track season. Everyone has their way to raise their energy level during a meet. Braden's way of getting his energy level up is by ranting, chanting, and telling everyone that he is going to kick their ass. Kathy and Paula raise their energy by racing against each other. Mitchell's way is by using his brain, analyzing every last angle to gain an advantage. Eddie's way is simple. He stays focused on the race, intentionally ignoring everyone around him. Apparently, messing with other runners during a meet is the way Mark gets his energy level up. By messing with McCutcheon, the potential of confrontation gets Mark's adrenaline levels up. During the late morning, everyone gets in the pool to cool off. Tessa asks everyone who has a dune buggy what they like and what they don't like about them. Mark is discussing ways to mess with Nacklo Brocklin. Kathy and Paula are talking with Barbara, who is very excited to be the new track coach at the high school next year. Erica is diving off of Bobby B's shoulders into the water. And everyone is occasionally looking toward the driveway, waiting for the pizza to arrive. While everyone is doing their thing, Eddie is talking with Akinmola about the mile. Akinmola is happy that, for the first time in his life, he beat Mitchell in the mile. Changing the subject, Eddie asks, "Did your dad find any land yet?" Akinmola replies, "No, not yet. but he's still looking. Eddie then yells over to Kathy, "Should I tell him?" Knowing exactly what Eddie is talking about, Kathy yells back, "Yeah, but wait. I'll be right there." Kathy makes her way over to the corner of the pool where Eddie and Akinmola are standing, stopping to talk with Erica for a moment. Akinmola asks Eddie, "Is there something that I should know?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. But wait until Kathy gets here." Kathy finally makes her way to where Eddie and Akinmola are hanging out, which seemed like an eternity has passed to Akinmola. Akinmola asks, "What is so important that I should know about?" Eddie replies, "We have some good news." Akinmola asks, "What's the good news, my friend?" Eddie would have moved on to answering the question, but Akinmola never misses the opportunity to ask another question. Eddie explains, "We found some land for your dad to build a church." Suddenly all excited, Akinmola exclaims, "Really? Are you serious, man?" Kathy tells Akinmola, "Yeah, we're serious." Akinmola asks, "Where is this land?" Eddie replies, "It's across the street from the high school." Akinmola tells Eddie, "Wow. That would be a really good location." Kathy adds, "That's what we thought." Moving on to his next question, Akinmola asks, "So, tell me. How big is this land?" Kathy explains, "It's a little bigger than you said your dad wanted. It's 7 acres. Akinmola exclaims, "7 acres? You ain't making this up, are you?" Kathy replies, "No. Not at all." Akinmola, like the rest of the tribe, is always suspicious that someone may be messing with him. And, for good reason. Everyone in the tribe occasionally gets messed with, and messes with someone else. Akinmola is suddenly very excited. It has been a little more than 3 years, and Dr. Akinmola has not yet found a suitable tract of land to build a church. When Eddie found the property on his way to work, he had Dr. Akinmola in mind. Kathy was fully on board with acquiring the property before someone else gets the idea to buy it. So, Eddie and Kathy bought the property. Eddie and Kathy reason that, if Dr. Akinmola did not want the property because of the location, they can get Mark to build a few houses on the land and sell them. Akinmola tells Eddie, "I want to see this property." Eddie explains, "It's 7 acres, and it's level. The land is cleared. You've seen it before. Mitchell drove by the property on your way here." Akinmola tells Eddie, "Yeah, I know. I saw it, but I didn't look at it." Getting out of the pool, Akinmola tells Eddie and Kathy, "I'm going to run over there and look now." Knowing that Akinmola will stop at nothing to take a look at the property, Kathy looks at Eddie and tells him, "Just drive him. Take the dune buggy." Eddie tells Akinmola, "Come on, let's go." Eddie and Akinmola get into the dune buggy and head to the site. When they arrive, Eddie drives off the road and through the property. Akinmola exclaims, "Wow. This land is perfect. It's across from the high school and right off the main road." When they get to the side of the property that adjoins the highway, Eddie points out, "Here's a place that would be a great location for a sign. Everyone driving down the highway will see it." Akinmola exclaims, "Eddie, my friend, this place is perfect. How did you find this, my man?" Eddie explains, "I was driving to work one day, and I saw the sign." Now that Akinmola's curiosity is satisfied, Eddie and Akinmola head back to the house. When Eddie and Akinmola return to the house, they get there just in time for pizza. Between bites of pizza, Kathy asks Akinmola, "So, what do you think?" Akinmola, who cannot contain his excitement, tells Kathy, "That land is perfect. I'll have to show my dad." Kathy tells him, "Oh, good. After he graduates from the seminary, Akinmola will likely be working with his father in the church. The news of the property will not only be good news to Dr. Akinmola, but to his son as well." After lunch, the group all returns to the pool, except for Tessa. Tessa is examining each dune buggy, as if she is a quality control technician. The land that Eddie showed Akinmola earlier is on Akinmola's mind. Akinmola is sitting alone, contemplating the many possibilities of what can be done with not 3, but 7 acres. Mark is sitting back, thinking of a few innovative ways of messing with Nacla Brocklin. After lunch, however, most everyone else is relaxed, laying in the sun or enjoying the pool. When they get a moment alone, Kathy asks Eddie, "Did you give Akinmola all the news?" Eddie replies, "No. Not yet." Kathy suggests, "Maybe we can do that tomorrow." Eddie points out, "Dr. Akinmola hasn't seen the property yet. Let's see if he likes it first." Kathy replies, "That's a plan." As the afternoon begins to wind down and the guests are headed out, Tessa asks Eddie, "Can I buy the white dune buggy?" Eddie replies, "Sure, if you want to. You do realize it doesn't have a heater, and the top isn't exactly weather-tight." Tessa tells Eddie, "I know. I've been checking them out." Surprising Tessa, Eddie tells her, "I saw you looking underneath them. It looks to me like you were really looking them over." Tessa replies, "I was. So, can I buy it?" Eddie replies, "Sure. What do you want to be painted on the back?" Tessa replies, "Tessa's dune buggy. I want it to be like everyone else's." Eddie tells Tessa the price, and that the dune buggy will be finished before school starts. Tessa is excited and can't wait for her dune buggy to be finished. The next day, Eddie and Kathy attend Dr. Akinmola's church service. Before the service, Kathy asks Akinmola if he spoke with his father about the property. Akinmola indicates that he has, and that his father is very excited about the possibility of moving forward with constructing a church building. Akinmola also mentions that he and his father were going to take a look at it after lunch today. After the church service, Dr. Akinmola, Mrs. Akinmola, Ada Cunley, Dr. Akinmola's daughter Sade, Eddie, and Kathy all go out to eat lunch together. Over lunch, they talk about the property, and the excitement level rises. After lunch, they head over to the property. Eddie and Kathy drive Kathy's dune buggy, just in case Dr. Akinmola wants to take a drive through the land. Dr. Akinmola and his family follow in their family car. Arriving at the property, Kathy pulls off the road and onto the land. Since four-door sedans aren't very well equipped for driving off-road, Dr. Akinmola parks across the street in the high school parking lot. Dr. Akinmola stands across the street, looking at the land from a distance. Kathy mentions to Eddie, "I think he might like it." Eddie replies, "How do you know? He's not even coming across the street." Kathy bumps Eddie's hip with hers and tells him, "He's not coming across the street because he's standing there admiring it." After a minute, Dr. Akinmola walks across the street with his family. Once they've crossed the street, Kathy throws out the question, "So, what do you guys think?" Looking out at the property, Dr. Akinmola exclaims, "This place is beautiful." Perceiving that Dr. Akinmola likes the property, Eddie asks him, "Do you want to walk around, or have Kathy drive you around?" Dr. Akinmola tells Eddie, "Thank you, but we're all going to walk. I don't want to miss a thing." Sade asks, "Are there any bunny rabbits?" Dr. Akinmola replies, "If you see a bunny rabbit, you are leaving it here. This is the bunny rabbit's home." Eddie and Dr. Akinmola lead, as they all take a trek through the land. There is no question whether Dr. Akinmola likes the land or not. As they are walking, Dr. Akinmola is continually commenting how beautiful and perfect the land is. Dr. Akinmola asks Eddie, "How big is this land again?" Eddie replies, "It's 7 acres. It's approximately 500 feet across the front and 610 feet deep." Once they have walked around the entire property, they all stop somewhere in the middle. Kathy asks again, "So, what do you guys think?" Dr. Akinmola replies, "This land is beautiful. This is perfect. I'm just wondering how much it is going to cost." Kathy looks at Eddie, and Eddie nods his head, apparently signaling something to Kathy. Kathy asks Dr. Akinmola again, "So, you really like it?" Dr. Akinmola replies, "I could not ask for anything better. This is twice as big as I was hoping for, and four times bigger than I was expecting." Kathy tells Dr. Akinmola, "Eddie and I bought this property a few weeks ago. We'd like to donate it to your church so you can get started with the building." Hearing what Kathy said, Dr. Akinmola is in shock. Falling to his knees, the only words he is able to get out are, "Thank you, Jesus." With tears of happiness flowing down her eyes, Mrs. Akinmola tells Eddie and Kathy, "Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much." Akinmola, who always asks a lot of questions, asks Eddie, "Are you guys serious, man?" Eddie gives Akinmola a fist bump and replies, "Yeah. Totally, bro." Akinmola tells Eddie, "Wow. That is really, really nice of you guys." Eddie tells Akinmola, "The good part is that Mr. Crumb is no longer the principal across the street." Akinmola comments, "And the school can only be a better place without him. My sister is going there next year." Eddie joins the conversation between Kathy and Dr. Akinmola. Dr. Akinmola tells Eddie, "We have been looking for a tract of land since we've moved here. Our church has saved enough money for the land, or to build a building, but not both. This will really help us move forward. I thank both of you very, very much." Eddie replies to Dr. Akinmola, "You're welcome. We're just happy to help." Eddie then mentions, "It sounds like you can start building soon." Dr. Akinmola tells Eddie, "I don't even know where to begin. We'll have to find a builder." Eddie explains, "If you want, my father, Mark's father, and Mark can build it for you." Dr. Akinmola asks, "Are you serious? Do they know how to build a church building?" Eddie replies, "They do commercial construction. They can handle it. No problem. And Kathy can drive the bulldozer." Dr. Akinmola turns to Kathy and asks, "Do you really know how to drive a bulldozer?" Kathy smiles and replies, "I sure can. And so can Paula." Eddie, Dr. Akinmola, and his family walk around the property again, taking more time to look since acquiring the land has become a reality. Sade seems to be more interested at the moment of getting a ride in Kathy's June buggy. Kathy drives Sade around, as everyone else walks the property. Akinmola and Eddie split off from the rest of the group for a few minutes. Akinmola tells Eddie, "My dad was trying to decide if he should lease his space for 5 more years. He has to decide by the end of next year." Eddie tells Akinmola, "The building can easily be built by then. No problem." After Sade gets her ride in Kathy's June buggy, Kathy and Eddie get ready to head out. Everyone says goodbye and will keep in touch. On the way out, Kathy tells Eddie, "Sade wants a June buggy." Eddie replies, "How old is she, like 14 or something?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. She said she'll be going to high school next year." As Kathy and Eddie drive away, Dr. Akinmola and his family take one last look at the land before they head out. While they are headed back to their car, Sade asks her parents, "Can I get a June buggy, please?" That's not exactly the question Dr. Akinmola wants to field right now, so he tells her, "If you want one, you'll have to save up your money." Just before classes start again, at the high school and the university, Officer Hayes drops by the service station to give Eddie some news. Officer Hayes often stops by Angelo's service station to say hello, but today is a little different. Officer Hayes walks back to the service area and tells Eddie, "Hey, thanks for the tip." Thinking Richard was referring to a stock tip, Eddie tells Richard, "Don't forget to sell it before October." Richard replies, "Not that one. Maurice Crumb. We sent a detective and some heavy equipment out to the county dump. They found his house among the construction trash. We found his money and some drugs. Eddie replies, wow. How much money did he have? Richard reveals, he had a little more than $58,000 in locked metal boxes, just like he described to us. Eddie exclaims, and he lived in that dump on 2nd Street. That just doesn't make any sense. Richard explains, he had a sophisticated operation going on over there on 2nd Street. This character used the abandoned houses for drop-off and delivery points. Some of the bills were marked. So, now we know exactly where Maurice Crumb sat in the supply chain. But, that's not why I'm here. Why I stopped by today is to let you know that there's another warrant out for Maurice Crumb's arrest. So, if he stops by, call us and stall him if you can. Eddie replies, that should be easy. I'll just pull a wire from his ignition. Eddie then asks, what did he do this time? Richard replies emphatically, we now have evidence that this character is part of a gambling operation. Eddie pauses for a moment and exclaims, wow. Mr. Crumb, the gambler. Richard explains, a good number of the marked bills we found in his stash were used in gambling. They were used to place bets. Our men placed the bets through agents. Many of the bills were found in his stash. We know who a few of the agents are, but we are still trying to find the ringleaders. With $58,000, many of them marked bills, there is a lot to sort out. Eddie replies, wow. This sounds complicated. With his limited knowledge of gambling, Eddie asks, what was Crumb gambling? Richard explains, high school and college sports. He was part of a ring that takes bets. It's not the big time, but apparently they made out really well. The way we see it, it's more to show the judge at his trial. Shocked at the news, Eddie exclaims, wait a second. High school sports. Richard replies, yeah. Can you believe it? Eddie suddenly gets very concerned and tells Richard, follow me, as Eddie walks into the office. Apparently, a light bulb went off in Eddie's head. Eddie tells Richard, have a seat. Eddie, who is now obviously ticked off, hammers his fist on the desk and tells Richard that Pepperseater Head, Crumb, was always interfering with the sports teams at the high school. Right before a meet, he would find a reason to suspend one or two athletes. It's not only track. It's all the sports. And it's always the better athletes he's after. I'm not talking about now and then. It was constant, and it never ended. That piece of shit was rigging the outcomes of the meets. Eddie is not stupid. He has just figured it out. Eddie now knows why Mr. Crumb was always interfering with the track team and the other sports teams, except for one team in particular. Eddie listens as Richard radios the precinct, telling them, 3:15 to radio. The dispatcher replies, 3:15. Go ahead. Richard replies, I'll be 10-7 at Angelo's service station. The dispatcher replies, 3:15, 10-4. 10-7 at Angelo's. Eddie now knows something serious is going on. And Richard knows that Eddie, again, may have some more valuable information. Richard asks Eddie, what else do you know? Eddie replies, Mr. Brian, one of the social studies teachers, is one of Mr. Crumb's buddies. Richard is taking notes as Eddie spills his heart. Eddie continues, Mr. Brian would always fail certain athletes. If an athlete is failing any class, they are not allowed to play sports until they have passing grades. That Mr. Crumb had Mr. Brian in his back pocket the whole time. And, for some reason, Mr. Crumb always wanted Mr. O'Brien's son on the track team. Jimmy O'Brien ran the 440-yard dash in over 2 minutes. He sucked. Put O'Brien on any relay team, and they'll lose. Eddie hammers his fist on the desk again and blurts out, Mr. Ryan. Mr. Crum never interfered with the baseball team. What is so special about the baseball team that they always got a pass? Richard asks, there was no interference with the baseball team, but there was with all the other teams. Eddie replies, yeah. Exactly. Well, the major teams, anyway. No one ever interfered with the girls' badminton team. Richard asks, and this Mr. Ryan is the baseball coach. Eddie replies, yeah. Richard hypothesizes, if Crum and Ryan were working together, the coach could easily make substitutions to affect the outcome of the game. Eddie replies, so, I bet that Mr. Crum, Mr. Brian, and Mr. Ryan are all in it together. I can believe that. Richard tells Eddie, that gives me something more to investigate. Calming down a bit, Eddie tells Richard, you really need to talk with John Davies. Richard asks, the attorney in town. Eddie replies, yeah, that's him. As he starts a new page in his book, Richard asks, what's the deal with John Davies? Eddie explains, years ago, John Davies was all set to get a football scholarship to some big university. Mr. Crum suspended him for drinking a beer on school grounds. John was 18. At the time, it was on a Saturday, and school wasn't even in session. Mr. Crum, who just happened to be at the school, saw it, and suspended him anyway. So, now listen to this. When Davies wasn't allowed to play in the divisional semifinals, the team got hammered big time. I think the final score was like 63-6. We were expected to win that game, but we got creamed. That's when the school board hired Mr. Zunday to keep Mr. Crum in line. Richard is taking more notes, becoming aware that the gambling ring may be a little more extensive than originally thought. Richard asks, this Mr. Zunday, what exactly does he do at the high school? Eddie replies, he's the athletic director and teaches a few gym classes. The superintendent, Dr. Brooks, is Mr. Zunday's cousin. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Crum were at it for the entire 4 years I was there. And until Mr. Crum was arrested, they were still at it. But now, all the gym teachers report to Mr. Zunday. Mr. Zunday reports directly to the school board. Mr. Crum was interfering with athletics so bad, the school board had to take Mr. Crum out of the chain of command. Eddie then asks, do you remember when Mr. Crum attacked me? Richard replies, I do remember that. Eddie confesses, my only regret is that I didn't body slam that piece of shit harder. Recalling his senior year in high school, Eddie tells Richard, there might even be more. Richard asks, what do you mean? Eddie explains, Centerville High School. The coach over there is Mr. Ruff. Mr. Crum and Mr. Ruff got into a huge spat after a four-way indoor meet once. I remember hearing Mr. Ruff tell Mr. Crum, that really tilts the odds in your favor. You weren't supposed to take everything. I was wondering at the time what that was supposed to mean. 4 days before that meet, Mr. Crum was on the rampage. He tried to suspend Braden, and he wanted to suspend Erica too. And he desperately wanted Jimmy O'Brien and the Chucky on the team. If Mr. Crum got what he wanted, O'Brien and the Chucky would have weakened the team. But we took the gold medal in every event during that meet. Reviewing his notes, Richard informs Eddie, when someone uses the phrase, that really tilts the odds in your favor, they are likely referring to gambling. Eddie proposes, if I had to guess, if Mr. Crum was in on it, so is Mr. Ruff, the coach at Centerville. Get this. Centerville had this runner, a guy named Todd McCrutchen. Actually, his name is Todd McCutcheon, but we call him McCrutchen. Anyway, McCrutchen's times were always erratic. He would run the 440-yard dash one day in 57 seconds, and the next week, he would run it in 75 seconds. Richard asks, really? That's quite the spread. Eddie continues, telling Richard, it doesn't stop there. How can a relay team make it to state every year and totally blow it like Centerville did every year? And at every meet, Mr. Ruff was always complaining about something. Richard gets the impression that the problem may be even worse than he originally thought. Richard asks, what year is this McCutcheon character in now? Eddie replies, he was a sophomore at the university, but he just got expelled. Richard tells Eddie, wait a second. Todd McCutcheon got expelled from the university. Eddie replies, yeah. So did a guy named Steve Leggett. Richard asks, do you know why this McCutcheon character got expelled? Eddie replies, oh, yeah. He planted steroids in my locker. The dean of students at the university got an anonymous tip that I was using and selling them. Then, McCutcheon, Leggett, and a third guy tried to plant steroids in Mark's locker, but the campus police caught them. The lot number and manufacturing date of the steroids they tried to plant in Mark's locker matched the ones that were planted in my locker. And the police found the same steroids in McCrutchen's dorm room. Looking at his notes, Richard asks, how does this Leggett character fit in? Eddie explains, he picked the locks for McCrutchen. Braden found out that Leggett's father is a locksmith. Richard replies, wow. This gets better all the time. Eddie raises his index finger into the air, shaking his arm, and tells Richard, you know. Last year, at the high school state invitational meet, Todd McCutcheon snuck into a relay race. His brother, Jeff, was on the roster, but Todd McCutcheon took his brother's place. But the plan failed and Centerville got caught, and they got a one-year sanction. So, they can't participate in any state-level event this year. According to Kathy's father, if they didn't get caught, they would have gotten the bronze medal. Richard asks, how did they get caught? Eddie replies, Braden saw McCutcheon on the track when he was talking with Kathy's father. So did me and Mark. We yelled down to them from the stands, but they apparently already figured it out. Richard shakes his head, wondering how this piece of the puzzle will fit. Richard asks, you mentioned the dean of students was involved with the case. How was he involved? Eddie replies, he pretty much kicked me out of the university. But when McCutcheon got caught, they reinstated me. Eddie begins to think that, if McCutcheon succeeded in framing Mark, who would have been next? Richard asks, who is the dean of students? Eddie replies, his name is Dean Grimsby. He's a real asshole, if you ask me. Richard takes more notes, wondering which pieces are part of the puzzle and which ones are not. Eddie hammers his fist on the desk again and exclaims, McCrutchen's brother used to go to the university. Richard asks, what is his brother's name? Eddie replies, his name is Scott. So, now I'm wondering if the third person who was never caught was Scott McCutcheon. Richard asks, now, let me get this straight. This third person involved in planting the steroids in Mark's locker was never caught. Eddie replies, yeah. Exactly. Todd McCutcheon and Steve Leggett both denied there was a third person, but Braden was chasing two people. The other officer had Leggett detained in the locker room. Richard tells Eddie, I've been around a while. I can just about guarantee you that Scott McCutcheon was the third person. Blood is thicker than water. He's not going to turn in his brother. Eddie recalls telling Richard, at the university, Johnson was on the mile medley relay team with Todd McCutcheon. McCutcheon ran the second 220-yard leg. During one race, he ran his leg in like 45 seconds. A good time for running 220 yards would be in the lower to middle 20-second range. You would definitely expect the time to be better than 30 seconds. But 45 seconds just really sucks. Braden can run 440 yards in 45 seconds. But anyway, McCutcheon also bungled both of the handoffs during that race. One of the guys on the relay team thought McCutcheon intentionally threw the race. Richard, getting the big picture, is writing down everything Eddie says. Eddie and Richard talk for a while longer. Richard has discovered that he apparently has a lot more to investigate. Eddie has figured out that many of the outcomes of the sports competitions in his high school were possibly rigged. Worst of all, the possibility that the sports at the university are also rigged irritates Eddie. Eddie can't wait to hear how Richard's investigation goes. But, for now, Eddie goes back to work, and Richard has a lot more pieces of the puzzle to work with. When Kathy gets home later that afternoon, she finds Eddie in his shop working on Tessa's June buggy. Eddie sort of promised Tessa that it would be ready by the time classes start, and time is running out. Kathy walks into the shop and asks Eddie, "Do you need any help?" Eddie replies, "No. I'm almost done for now." Kathy tells Eddie, "I'm all registered for classes. And I made sure they reinstated my scholarship." Eddie asks, "Did you get me registered too?" Kathy laughs and reminds him, "The school takes care of your special registration. But I did get you your parking sticker." Eddie tells Kathy, "Richard came by the station today. There's another warrant out for Mr. Crumb's arrest." Kathy asks, "Oh, really? What did the little weasel do this time?" Eddie replies, "You're not going to believe it." Taking a seat in Tessa's white June buggy, Kathy exclaims, "Try me. This has got to be good." Kathy is somehow jubilant that Mr. Crumb is in trouble once again. Eddie explains, "Richard said that Mr. Crumb was part of a gambling ring." Kathy replies, "Well, that's maybe a little better than dealing drugs." Eddie continues, "Well, not really. He said they found the money that was hidden in Mr. Crumb's house. They found $58,000 in locked boxes. Some of the bills were marked and were used in gambling." Kathy replies, "Wow. $58,000. And he lived in that dump." Eddie replies, "That's exactly what I said." Eddie continues, "But that's not the big part. Richard said the gambling was betting on high school and college sports teams. So, get this. The reason Mr. Crumb tried to suspend athletes and Mr. O'Brien always failed athletes is to fix the outcome of the games. And Mr. Ryan, the baseball coach, is probably in on it too. Mr. Crumb never messed with the baseball team. But it doesn't end there. Think about what happened to John Davies." Eddie explains all of what he and Officer Hayes discussed regarding high school sports. After hearing Eddie's news regarding Mr. Crumb's interference with athletics, Kathy, barely able to compose herself, exclaims, "That little piece of crumb shit." Eddie tells Kathy, "It doesn't stop there. The gambling ring extends to college sports. Now I'm thinking McCrutchen is involved." Kathy asks, "How is that?" Eddie points out, "Can you tell me one other runner that can run a 57-second quarter mile one day and a 75-second quarter mile a week later?" "No, you can't. And think about all those bungled handoffs." Kathy exclaims, "McCrutchen's brother was the same way. His times were all over the place." Eddie tells Kathy, "Richard said the third person helping McCrutchen and Lug Nut when they got caught planting steroids in Mark's locker was probably Scott McCrutchen." Thinking about what Eddie has revealed, Kathy gets very quiet and thinks to herself for a while, recalling the many past events at the high school. Meanwhile, Eddie finishes connecting the antenna for the two-way radio underneath the rear fender. After a few minutes, Eddie emerges from underneath the June buggy. Kathy tells Eddie, "I think I figured something out." Eddie asks, "What's that?" Kathy explains, "Now, I'm guessing what you and Richard know so far is only the tip of the iceberg. So, if you wanted to affect the outcome of a game or track meet, you'd have a lot better chance of doing it if you can take out the better players, like John Davies. Now, listen to this. With you, Mark, Braden, Johnson, Mitchell, and everyone else on the university team who never loses, they can't fix the races any longer." Eddie adds, "And you, Paula, and Barbara too." Kathy concludes, "That means they can't make money. It's a sure bet that you'll win the 100-yard dash. It's a sure bet that Mark will win the 220-yard dash. And no one is going to beat Braden in the 440-yard dash. If they take you guys down, they are back in business. They can't fix races that can't be fixed. Eddie exclaims, wow. You are definitely onto something here, Katerina Karakova. Kathy smiles and replies, for your information, buddy, it's Katerina Boganskaya now. Kathy exclaims, that's why they never went after Stone. Eddie asks, now, what are you talking about? Kathy explains, Daryl Stone is Provost Layton's son. He won every race he ran until Mitchell came along. They are not going to go after him. Eddie exclaims, just like they are not going after you because your dad is the athletic director. And you, Paula, and Barbara are good friends, so they are not going after them either. Kathy is now livid. She points out to Eddie, so, now our team is winning everything, just like we did in high school. And it's the same old crap, just like in high school, all over again. Except, instead of detention and suspension, it's the big time. It's planting steroids in lockers and expulsion. Seeing the light, Kathy tells Eddie, there's definitely something going on here. We need a tribe meeting. Eddie replies, yeah, I'd say. And we should invite Mr. Zunday and Richard. Kathy concludes, we're doing that. Eddie and Kathy believe they are onto something. With the proof sitting in the evidence room at the police station, Officer Hayes is also confident that he is onto something. Betting in sports is commonplace. So is fixing the outcome of the event if enough money is at stake. In order to fix the outcome of an event, there has to be someone on the inside in order to do that. To get to the bottom of who is behind the gambling operation, if in fact it does exist, would be analogous to opening Pandora's box. Going down that path and getting to the root of the situation is certain to invite a few unexpected surprises. But that does not seem to bother Eddie or Kathy. And it certainly does not bother Officer Richard Hayes. While Kathy is arranging the tribe meeting, life goes on as usual. Eddie goes to work in the mornings, and Kathy does, well, what Kathy does. Kathy has been doing a lot of training recently and getting ready to play a larger role in coaching the high school track team. Kathy and Paula have met with Barbara a few times, getting their plan ready for when they begin practice in the autumn. One day, while Eddie is at work, a familiar face drives into the service station. This time, fortunately, it is not Paul Mahoney or Mr. Crum. Today's familiar face is Jimmy O'Brien, the track star wannabe who never made the team because the system isn't fair. O'Brien was never able to make the cut on the high school track team in spite of 4 years of trying, blaming his failures on everything but his own ability, or lack of it. As he drives in, Jimmy O'Brien pulls his brand new Mercedes-Benz up to the pumps. Manning the station alone, while Angelo is away on vacation, Eddie takes a break and goes out to the pumps. Eddie is wise enough to not let Jimmy O'Brien touch the gas pumps. Doing so will only invite disaster. Wondering how O'Brien struck it rich, Eddie is ready to hear the story. O'Brien opens the window and asks Eddie, can you fill it up with regular? Eddie replies, no. This car takes premium. O'Brien tells Eddie, no one told me that. Then, I guess, put premium in it. Eddie replies, sure. No problem. As Eddie is pumping the gas, O'Brien asks Eddie, so, how do you like it? Eddie replies, it looks pretty nice. Is it yours? O'Brien answers, yeah. I just bought it. Eddie asks, wow. You must have a good job. Where are you working? O'Brien explains, I'm working at the burger place downtown. I'm a manager now. Eddie replies, wow. It looks like you made the big time. O'Brien adds, well, my dad helped me buy the car. O'Brien snickers and asks Eddie, so, is that all you're doing now? Pumping gas? Eddie replies, yeah, that's all I'm doing now. Pumping gas. O'Brien pays Eddie for the gas and drives off. After O'Brien leaves, Eddie is now fully convinced that Mr. O'Brien is in on the gambling ring. Kathy managed to get the entire tribe together for a tribe meeting. Mr. Zunday, Mr. Fraser, and Officer Hayes, the police officer doing the investigation, have all made the time in their schedules to be present. John Davies, the local attorney who lost his football scholarship years ago because of Mr. Crum, has also made the time to attend the meeting. Mr. Zunday was kind enough to host the meeting in the high school's auxiliary gym, a place with which everyone is quite familiar. High school classes will begin shortly, with the teachers in school a few days before the students arrive. Since Officer Hayes is conducting the investigation, Kathy decided that he should be the one who is running the meeting. Officer Hayes opens the meeting introducing himself and asks everyone to introduce themselves to him and each other. Officer Hayes knows many of the athletes, particularly because he has had to be called out to the high school on numerous occasions. Due to the nature of the meeting, Mr. Zunday also asked that all of the physical education staff be present today. For consideration of their time, Mr. Zunday has given them Friday, which is a teacher's work day, off. The physical education staff still reports to Mr. Zunday, so there's nothing anyone can do about it anyway. After the introductions, getting down to business, Officer Hayes announces, "From what I gather, no one is sad to see Maurice Crum gone. As all of you know by now, Maurice Crum has been arrested for possession of, with intent to distribute, various banned and controlled substances. What you may not know is that Maurice Crum is suspected to be involved in a gambling operation." The room suddenly gets very silent, as Officer Hayes continues, "Maurice Crum was not betting on horses or dogfights. We have definitive evidence that Maurice Crum was part of a gambling ring that rigs sporting events at both the high school and college level." Officer Hayes now has everyone's full attention. Elaborating, Officer Hayes continues, "We have discovered that most of the activity has been at the collegiate level. At the high school level, most of the activity was confined to the state-level competitions, the higher-profile events, and divisional championship games. I understand from some of you that Maurice Crum has interfered with this school's athletic program for many years." Officer Hayes continues, reiterating much of his conversation with Eddie a few days ago. Officer Hayes, however, does not reveal all of what he knows to those who are present. He only reveals the amount of information necessary to obtain more information. After his presentation, Officer Hayes explains, "Why I am here today is because I need your help. If you are a faculty member or an administrator, and have any evidence of students being suspended, given detention, or unduly given failing grades to prevent them from competing, I would like to speak with you. If you are a student, either in college or high school, and you suspect that you've been benched in favor of a less qualified athlete, I'd like to speak with you. If you have been subjected to improper or inappropriate disciplinary action that prevented you from competing, I'd like to speak with you." Officer Hayes is hoping to obtain a substantial amount of information for his investigation. Specifically, Officer Hayes is looking for the names of people who are potentially involved with the gambling ring. While Officer Hayes conducts a question and answer session, Mr. Zunday leaves the gym and heads to the athletic office. Mr. Fraser is appalled at what he is hearing, but finally gets some answers that explains all the crap he's had to endure for years. Braden now realizes why he's been a target of Mr. Crum before every big meet. John Davies, who probably suffered the greatest blow from the gambling operation, finally understands the real reason for his suspension years ago. Erica, a frequent target of Mr. Crum's disciplinary action, cannot hide her frustration and anger. And Eddie's brother, John, now realizes exactly why Mr. Crum was after him personally. Mr. Zunday returns from the athletic office, where he made copies of his files documenting each and every instance of Mr. Crum interfering with athletics over the years. Seeing Mr. Zunday returning with a copy of the file, Mr. Fraser asks, "Did you copy the whole file?" Mr. Zunday replies, "Every last page. I suspect we have enough here to keep the officer busy for a while." Mr. Fraser whispers to Mr. Zunday, "I hate to say it, but maybe Crumb was a little smarter than I thought." Mr. Zunday whispers back, "Well, he couldn't have been that smart. It sounds like he left enough evidence to put him away until I retire." Mr. Fraser comments, "I'm just happy for Barbara. She won't have to put up with him." After the question and answer session, Officer Hayes hands out his business card to everyone in case they think of any other information that may help. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser walk up to Officer Hayes and deliver the file. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, who are a goldmine of information, have a good conversation with Officer Hayes. Mr. Davies joins the conversation, who is glad to see Mr. Fraser again. After the meeting, Officer Hayes tells Kathy, "I can't tell you how much I appreciate you putting this together." Kathy replies, "We're all glad to help. I'm sure that Mr. Zunday, Mr. Fraser, and Barbara are grateful that Mr. Crumb is gone." Officer Hayes asks, "I believe Mr. Fraser said he is the new university track coach. Am I correct?" Kathy replies, "Yeah, sort of. He's one of the coaches." Officer Hayes asks for Mr. Fraser to come over for a moment. Mr. Zunday heads out, satisfied that his meticulous documentation over the years had a purpose. Officer Hayes tells a few of the attendees that he would like to speak to them confidentially about what is going on at the university. Officer Hayes, Eddie, Kathy, and Mr. Fraser move aside and have their private conversation as everyone else heads out. Eddie calls Braden over. As Braden walks over, Officer Hayes asks Eddie, "Now, where exactly is Braden's assignment?" Eddie explains, "He's one of the campus police officers. He's the guy who busted McCrutchen putting steroids in Mark's locker." Looking through his notes, Officer Hayes tells Eddie, "That's right. You told me about him. You said he saw two people leaving the scene and apprehended one of them." Braden joins the private conversation and is ready to help. Officer Hayes tells Mr. Fraser, "I'm going to need your help. Over at the university, we have some evidence that at least one of the track coaches is involved in the gambling ring. I would appreciate it if you keep an eye on things and see what you can find out." Mr. Fraser tells Officer Hayes, "I'd be glad to. I want this problem solved as much as you do." Officer Hayes reveals, "And there's another university in the division that we suspect is involved as well. But more about that later." Officer Hayes then informs Eddie, Kathy, Braden, and Mr. Fraser, "Please keep this confidential. We don't want to make a move until we can identify all the key players." Braden asks, "Is there anything I can do to help?" Officer Hayes replies, "Yes. Someone at the university is controlling a few of the athletes. I cannot tell you who they are or how they are being coerced, because I don't know. That's the area that I need help in." Braden tells Officer Hayes, "I'm honored to help, sir. And I'm ready." Officer Hayes is glad to have an officer on the inside for this investigation. It's not every day that an officer participating in the investigation can be operating inconspicuously right in the middle of the action. Braden will make the perfect undercover officer. Undercover, and right out in the open, no one will ever suspect that Braden's eyes are on everyone. As they head out together, Eddie tells Mr. Fraser, "I guess we'll see you in a few days." Mr. Fraser responds, "I'll be looking forward to it." Kathy mentions to Mr. Fraser, "I guess we'll be back here next week. Barbara is starting practice in the fall just like you did." Mr. Fraser replies, "Barbara has worked with me for 8 years. You and Paula have been with me for 7 years. With Eddie and Mark, you guys are more than ready. Barbara will be walking into the position of the head track coach with 25 years of collective experience behind her. Mr. Zunde will be there to stand alongside her. Barbara and her assistant coaches should be able to handle it, especially now that Mr. Crumb is gone for good. Eddie and Kathy spend the next week getting ready for school. Getting ready for school amounts to getting things out of the way now because there will be no time to do them later. On the list is finishing Tess's June buggy. Eddie is also doing some work on his own June buggy, which will move along much faster once Tess's is done. Since high school starts a week or two before the university, track practice also starts at the high school. Working with the high school track team will keep Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula busy during the afternoons for 1 or 2 days a week. The first week of high school begins, and so does track practice. Barbara immediately begins working with the team during the first week of school. On the first day of tryouts for the autumn sports teams, the track team and the cross-country team meet in the auxiliary gym. Mr. Chubin introduces himself as the cross-country coach, and Barbara introduces herself as the head track coach. Barbara also introduces her assistant coaches, Kathy, Paula, and Mark, who will be helping her today. After a few words from the coaches, they all head out to the track, ready to begin training. Eddie, however, is a complete slacker. He is sitting in his MGB in the teacher's parking lot, off in a corner where he cannot easily be seen when he should be working with the team. Remembering that Jimmy O'Brien bought a new Mercedes-Benz, Eddie is curious to see what model vehicle Mr. O'Brien and Mr. Ryan drive. Expecting the teachers not involved in autumn extracurricular activities to leave shortly, Eddie hangs around for a while before he heads out to the track. The teachers leave a few at a time, ready to get home. Since it is the first week of classes, there is not much that they have to do after school. Mr. O'Brien, not exactly the most popular guy around, walks out alone. Eddie watches carefully, seeing Mr. O'Brien walk past a few cars. At the end of the parking lot, Mr. O'Brien gets into a Mercedes-Benz, a model that is a bit nicer and more expensive than the one his son, Jimmy, was driving. Eddie makes a note of the make and model, noting the license plate number. Eddie figures that teaching social studies is either a lucrative business, or Mr. O'Brien has something happening on the side. O'Brien drives out of the parking lot as Eddie waits for Mr. Ryan. One of the last to leave, Mr. Ryan, walks out with Mr. Harrison, the permanent substitute teacher. Mr. Harrison has the easiest job in the school. He fills in when a teacher is absent and babysits the class, often giving them work to do just to keep them busy. For some reason, Mr. Ryan gives Mr. Harrison a high five, and they each walk to their cars. Mr. Ryan gets into his Cadillac, as Eddie again makes a note of the make, model, and license plate number. Eddie also makes a note of the high five exchange. Being no surprise at all, Eddie sees Mr. Harrison get into his new De Tomaso Pantera, which he purchased last year. Last year, Eddie was wondering who owned the Pantera, which he immediately noticed one day before spring track practice. Eddie still has a hard time understanding how Mr. Harrison, who is literally the laziest teacher in the school, can afford a Pantera. In fact, it's hard to even call Mr. Harrison a teacher. Eddie again makes note of the make, model, and license plate number, adding it to his list. Eddie thinks to himself why Mr. Crumb, who has been dealing drugs and was involved in a gambling ring, would drive around in his Volkswagen Beetle when he could easily afford a vehicle that runs better. Eddie surmises that Mr. Crumb must have money or assets hidden elsewhere. But Eddie will leave that for Officer Hayes to investigate. Eddie, finishing his undercover work for the day, heads out to the track to join the rest of the coaches for practice. When Eddie gets to the track, he tells Kathy, "I think we have a problem." Kathy asks, "What did you find out?" Eddie replies, "Mr. O'Brien drives a Mercedes. Mr. Ryan drives a Cadillac. And Mr. Harrison drives a De Tomaso Pantera. I didn't think much of the Pantera last year when I first saw it, but this is all beginning to make sense." Kathy asks, "What's a Pantera?" Eddie replies, "It's an expensive mid-engine sports car. It's made in Argentina, but it's designed by an Italian design firm. And it has a 351 cubic inch Ford Cleveland engine in it. The parts to the car are made all over the world." Kathy asks, "Are you going to tell Officer Hayes about this?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. The next time he comes into the station." Eddie asks Kathy, "So, what are we doing?" Kathy replies, "We just finished timing everyone in the 100-yard dash. One freshman looks pretty good." Eddie asks, "Oh yeah. What did he run?" Kathy replies, "He ran a 10.5, which isn't too bad." Eddie then asks, "What did John run?" Kathy explains, "He's being real lazy. The fastest high school guy in the state ran a 9.6 today." Eddie replies, "Yeah. He's being lazy. It's either the June buggy or his girlfriend." Kathy informs Eddie, speaking about Anne, she's out with Barbara and the distance team on a run. They all ran a mile for time earlier. Eddie then asks, "So, what's next?" Kathy replies, "The 440-yard dash. And we're running it for time. Would you mind running with them? Maybe it will make them run faster." Eddie answers, "Sure. It sounds a lot easier than working that complicated stopwatch thing. And mine never blows up, like it's supposed to." Kathy tells Eddie, "We'll just have to get you a new one then." Getting a bit more serious, Kathy then tells Eddie, "Make them all look bad. This way they'll work harder." Eddie replies, "We'll do, boss." Eddie gets warmed up, ready to work out himself and get paid for it. Just like when Mark ran in the 100-yard dash, the 440-yard dash will be a one-man race. Eddie gets on the track. Getting set in the blocks, Eddie waits for the gun to go off. After the gun is fired, Eddie asks Kathy, "What was I supposed to do again?" Kathy replies, "Run." Eddie asks, "Which way?" Kathy laughs and points down the track, telling Eddie, "That way." Eddie starts sprinting. About 60 seconds later, Eddie crosses the finish line before any of the high school athletes. After a long first day of practice, calling it a day, Barbara and the team head back toward the school. As they are putting away the equipment, Kathy tells Eddie, "This is so sad." Eddie asks, "What? Is something wrong?" Kathy replies, "Just look at the team. No one goes out to get pizza anymore." Paula chimes in, stating, "I can solve that problem." Kathy and Paula both yell out in unison, "Pizza." It's no secret where the interns and track coach will be having dinner tonight. With the summer winding down, Eddie and Kathy take a day off and spend it in their pool. Since their pool is heated, they can enjoy it until late October. Kathy sits on Eddie's lap, putting her head on his shoulder, and tells him, "I love you so much." Eddie tells her, "I love you." They float around the pool together, leaving the world behind. Kathy tells him, "This has been a hard year. I hope next year goes a little easier." Eddie tells her, "You'll be a senior this year." Kathy replies, "Yeah, finally." Eddie points out, "Mr. Crumb is gone. McCrutchen is gone. Lug Nut is gone for good. Mr. Fraser is the new coach at the university. Barbara is the new coach at the high school. All that sounds good to me." Kathy replies, "Yeah, you're right. This year is going to be awesome." Kathy mentions, "John is a senior this year. Do you have any idea what he's going to do after graduation?" Eddie replies, "The best I can tell is he'll be driving in around in his June buggy and cutting lawns." Kathy points out, "When Johnson graduates, we'll need someone to take his place." Eddie points out, "By then, you'll be gone too." Kathy sighs and replies, "Oh yeah. I guess I'll get a job." Eddie asks, "Where?" Kathy replies, "At an elementary school. I'm going to be the gym teacher." Eddie suggests you can teach them early how to throw the discus. Kathy, who is getting very relaxed, replies, "Yeah, I can do that. Or maybe I can go to graduate school. Teaching elementary school students to throw a discus probably isn't going to happen, but it was a nice thought. Graduate school is a nice thought too. Kathy will figure it all out when the time comes." Putting her arms around his neck, Kathy looks Eddie in the eye and tells him, "Taking the long way home isn't my favorite anymore." Eddie asks, "What took its place?" Kathy replies, "Getting home the fastest way possible, so we can be here together, just like this." Kathy touches her lips to Eddie's and kisses him passionately. The rest of the afternoon, Eddie and Kathy catch up on the billions of kisses she promised.